Accession number 22077, Reel 9.
Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 9.
I forgot to tell you that before the war came to us, we had a very good football team, and we went to Bassi in Moulmein and Pegu to play. We won the Burma tournament, and it was the only time that a British regiment had ever won it, and they struck a special medal, three types of gold, you know, 9, 18 and 22 carat. We lost everything, of course, when we left Burma, so we didn't have it. One of my chums had one, and he's died now. I told you about my black Labrador. Family's already evacuated.
Let's get back to the convoy.
Yes.
So it was a convoy of lorries. I mean, how many lorries do you think there might have been? It's difficult.
Yeah. I'd hate to say. But I'll tell you in a moment what happened subsequently, you know what I mean, about with the lorries.
Right. So, I mean, you had very little notice.
We were told to go. Right. And in fact, I was going... They were going to send me sick because I had this dysentery and I didn't want to go. It didn't do me any good, but I stayed with the lads. And
so you packed up your machine gun and whatnot, did you, onto your lorry?
All our weapons were on. Yeah. Incidentally, can I say this? We had four scout cars, they called them. The plating was quite thick. And we had sandbags laid in the bed of the vehicle. And our mortars were actually mounted in the vehicles, so if we had to fire, we could have fired from there because you had to have something underneath to get it. And we were actually in the front when we moved off the mortar platoon. The band were stretcher bearers. They were with us or near our thing, and we moved up the road, and you could see this convoy right the way back. We were not touched at all. And then we got to a place called Taukian, T-A-U-K-A-N. And there we were halted by a roadblock. And I think we were all scared to death because we came under fire immediately we got there. I mean, we'd all fired weapons, but we never had them whistling by your ruddy ears like we were having them that day. And it was terribly frightening. I must admit this, thinking back to it now. And
and that was the Japanese,
wasn't it? The Japanese were there. They'd put the block down and they were going to stop everybody getting out.
Right.
And well, that's what they thought. And I remember very well, I have to say this, we had a brigadier called, his name was Jones. They called him Collapsible Jones because he'd blown the bridge at the river across the Sitang where the poor old coilies were on the other side, and they had an awful job. We didn't know about this at the time. But Collapsible Jones came. I was right, my colonel was right near my section with my Lieutenant Christensen. And we were laying down a barrage of mortars. We had one lad injured because his bomb hit the ruddy tree and it exploded. The only one of our chaps. And Collapsible Jones, I was there. He came to my colonel, Colonel Baggett, and he said, I think we'll have to surrender. And my colonel said, not over my dead body, you know. And the 7th tanks were there, and the commander came and he said, we're with you, colonel. And that was it. We stayed two days and nights. And it was awful. I'm not joking. It was awful.
That was your first time in action?
Yeah, really? The first time. And I know we were all scared to death. There isn't any doubt about it. We were soldiers, but we'd never had anything like this before. And
so how did your platoon cope with them?
Very well.
They
were wonderful, actually. I only lost one chap. At that particular point, his back was blown practically away, you know. Chucker Harris, his name was. Bandsman, he was, Chucker. And
and he was killed straight away, was he?
Yes, yes, quite. And that didn't do much good to the rest of the blokes, I can tell you, at the time. And the RSM, Sammy Clayton, then, the other man, had been promoted to lieutenant. He was in charge of a company. And Sammy Clayton, he had dysentery so bad, they put him down a well on a rubber tire. Yeah. Oh, he was ill, Sammy. He really was. I met him again later in hospital. But Sammy Clayton was very ill. And I've forgotten who took over at the time. I think it was Pupper Biggs. I think it was. He got the MM later. But we stayed there 2 days and two nights. We couldn't get out.
Where were you in relation to the road block? What did they block the road with?
With their trucks. They used to. This is what they did all the way up, by the way. And, of course, they were in very good enfiladed positions. They were quite lucky. What can I say about it?
Did you see where your waters were landing?
No. That was the trouble with...
What sort of terrain was it? Are we talking jungle?
I'm talking jungle at the moment. And this is the unfortunate thing about the Burma campaign, really. We were taught that the best place to put your mortar was behind an embankment where no one could see it because, you know, and that was all right, but not in the jungle. It didn't do you at all. There was nowhere to go. The bombs were just falling. I must admit, it must have kept them back because some of the barrels were red hot with the, and then we ran out of bombs, didn't we? You know, I mean, I know it sounds daft, but we didn't think about it at the time. You were looking after yourself. It was a case of I'm here today and gone tomorrow sort of business. There isn't any doubt about it.
So where was the civilian convoy? Were they
behind? All behind us, waiting. I don't know what they did for food because I remember Dinky Turner, my band sergeant, he was then a quartermaster. He brought us up coffee or tea or something during the night. We were underneath our scout car then. The Japs didn't attack at night at all at that time. And we had this trouble the next day, and we lost a few more men in the regiment. Middleton West, my adjutant, he went. And we lost quite a lot of chaps there, actually. But then, in the morning, we had a man named Filatov. He was a white Russian. We had four white Russians came to join our regiment. And Filatov was a carrier driver. We had four carriers. That was a carrier platoon. Four we had at the time, and Filatov went in to try and blast his way through. That was what he was like, you know, and to get a wounded man back. They blew the thing up under him. He wasn't hit, but his carrier went to pieces, and the chap he was trying to get out, couldn't get out. He went back and got another carrier and went back again. Yes, he got the MM over this, Filatov. Wonderful chap he was. He didn't speak very good English, but he was a lovely man. And eventually, on the morning of the second day, or the third day, would it be? Anyway, the Gurkhas came up. And we laid down a barrage, and the Gurkhas went in, and the Japanese were not there. They'd gone.
Oh, really?
Right. Well, that's what we assumed.
Had they gone before the Gurkhas got there?
Oh, yes. And I assume, because they did a circle and went into Rangoon, of course, the other way, right round the Cud. That's what we imagine. Now, after this, we moved up the road about 90 miles all day. Now, somebody must have had a bit of sense, because along the road there were places where you could find your petrol. You know what I mean? They'd put caches of petrol and so on. So vehicles were reasonably looked after.
What about food and supplies?
Very difficult. I don't want to go into that, really, because most of us got scurvy, and it was awful. Don't get me wrong.
What sort of rations were you getting? Did you have dry rations with you?
We had a lot of American rations, fortunately, at the time. It was all right while it lasted. You know, we had tin bacon in tins. It was very nice. Bully beef. Eventually, I think the lads must have been living on the land because it ran out eventually. Not whilst I was with the regiment for it. We didn't get very much.
Yeah.
We might get two meals a day. You may not have any lunch, but you'd have something at tea time. That was one of the worst things of all, I think. Blokes were very hungry. You'd eat any damn thing. Fortunately, in some places you could get fruit from trees and things. You know, there was relief there. But the first night I was put on standard duty to watch the civilians coming through and check who we could, who were on foot. And it wasn't half a job, believe me. Anyway, that's another story.
So what state were they in? I mean, they were
pretty bad. Some of them were in a shocking state, of course. Yeah. Well, a lot of them died on the way out. Those who weren't in lorries didn't get any place, I don't think. Same with some of our families, of course. But we went up the road, I said in my book, about 120 miles. It was about 90 miles, and we bivouacked, the regiment. I was on this listening post, and it was a bit of a problem trying to check people with no lights on at all. You know what I mean. So I expect a lot of decoys got through that we didn't know about and couldn't care less, quite frankly, at that time. I don't want to talk about that. Anyway, the...
So what is it you don't want to talk about?
Our divisional commander, he died just when I was telling my granddaughter about this, and I put it down there. A commendation came from General Callan, who was a general, and he said what a good show they'd put up and so on. And then we were at a place called Let Padan. Colonel Bagot was an MC from the First World War, by the way, and I said he was a real authoritarian man, good man, he was wonderful. And when we got to Let Padan, it was obvious the Japanese were coming up pretty quickly, so we pulled out of Let Padan, yes, and early the next morning we went back in, and the Japanese had occupied the place, yes. And unbeknown to them, because I know, I had a man named Blakeway. He was a thickie, but he was a damn good corporal. But I can see it now. The Japanese had mountain guns, and they must have picked them up from somewhere because they could put them on the back of elephants, you know, which they did. We saw the Japanese. Two of our companies had gone in on the left and on the right.
What sort of place was this? Let Padan?
It's a city, it's a village.
A village.
Right. Let Padan is a village.
A
little bit larger than a village, but that was the name of the place.
With some substantial buildings? Or...
We didn't see those. Right. They were behind where the Japanese were, was just where the open ground, unfortunately, and then all these trees. But you could see the Japanese moving about. My colonel said, we don't do anything yet. And then they fired this gun, and it came underneath Bill Blakeway's wagon and exploded somewhere up the road. It skidded along, you know what I mean? And Blakeway, I can see it now, he said, the bastards, and he got his mortar and he placed it at 1,200 yards, and you could see the gun and all the Japanese going up in the air. I'm not joking. Of course, everybody cheered. The regiment went in and they drove the Japanese out. And it was the first little victory that the regiment had had. So General Callan sent a letter down and the brigadier, and we lost a couple of men there, I think. I remember Notchie Price, one of my old drummers. He came back and his blood, I could see all the blood down. He said, hello, Mick. I said, are you all right? He said, well, I don't really know. Something hit me on the head, you know. But I never saw him again, Nazi, till later, years later. However, that was Let Padan. We moved on, and we came to a place called Shui Dong. We had a bad battle there. It was pretty bad.
You've still got the convoy behind you.
Most of them. Some had gone on because the tanks had taken quite a few of them away. And in fact, by the time we got to the next place, which was Pawn D, we were on our own. The tanks were with us, sort of, but the army was there. All the other civilians. Oh, some of them had gone on the river, by the way. They'd been taken up the river. So we had nobody else, just ourselves, to get out. Thank God for that, too, by the way. When we came, Shui Dong, was pretty bad. It was another, just a roadblock, and Japanese soldiers firing at you and hitting a couple of our... We didn't see any Japanese at all, but we knew they were there because what was happening. That was cleared out, and then we came to this place called Pondi. We had a bad time at Pondi. I remember it because we had played football there once, and the road that we went up, where we went with the people for tea, was where the Japanese had laid their guns. Straight down the road. And they had... How can I put it? They had knocked out two ambulances with people on board and two other trucks. And apart from their blockade, we had these as well in front of us, yes? There was nowhere to go. I mean, on the side is paddy fields, and little clumps of trees. And at Pondi, Major Morton, my company commander, was talking to the colonel, and his batman was there, Boy Caligrady, and the Japanese were firing, and suddenly Major Morton was literally cut in half with a machine gun, literally, and I wasn't very far away, and his batman, he wasn't touched. Colonel, there was trouble, and I had a 1500 weight vehicle with the bombs, all our mortar bombs were on my vehicle, and the colonel said to me, there are six men here wounded, badly wounded, Metcalf, is there anything we can do? And I said, well, I could try and take them away. One was an officer at the Cameroonians. He had a hell of a hole in his back. Two of my own chaps are from my regiment. And I think the others were Coyley lads. But anyway, the point was, they put them on my truck. It's a bit difficult to explain the terrain. The roads was there, and then it shelled right off to the sides like that. You understand me? And then you went into the cud, the paddy fields.
Paddy, yeah.
And the paddy
so
fields.
You couldn't come off the road. I
had to.
Drive on the road.
I had to. I had to. That was the point. And I nearly tipped up. That was the point. And on our vehicle, on my vehicle, I had Julie, Elsie, all the boys had their wives' names on. And the machine gun riddled right through there, but never hit anybody. The lads were on sandbags, you see.
Right.
And we were scared to death. And how I got down that bank, I do not know. I thought we were going to tip over. Once we got down there, it wasn't too bad till we went over the buns, because every paddy field has a sort of a bun, a little bun to keep the water in, you know. And driving a vehicle through a dry paddy field, you know, and the poor blokes were all, I was feeling terrible. Apart from anything else, I was scared to death as well. And I got away. And then I didn't know what to do or where to go.
Yes. Which way were you heading now?
North. We're heading towards Prome, actually.
Right.
That was
so
our...
That was the way that the evacuation...
That's right, going up north. There was a reason for that, because there was an airfield up at... two airfields on that way. There... I got to a place, and then I could see the road, and I saw a tank coming down. And I didn't know whether it was one of ours or one of theirs. You know what I mean? Because theirs were not unlike ours, but it was unusual. And then a bloke was waving his hand out, and I went towards them, and he said, "You Gloucesters?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "We'll take you up to the first aid post," which they did. And when I got there, Smudger Smith was there, my band sergeant. He'd lost his eye. And he got the MM as well, dear old Smudge, and my chum John Jarvis. They were both bandsmen who were stretcher bearers, of course. And I stayed with them for a while. And then the assistant adjutant came by and he said, "Metcalf, you sit with me and we'll check the men in as they come in." And we sat there. There weren't many men came back, by the way. And then... my colonel, Colonel Baggett, he had to go through a field that was on fire, and he burnt his feet badly, you know, and they had to be evacuated. He didn't want to go. Yeah, he didn't go in the end anyway. But Charlie Baggett, we had a new colonel came, but I don't know.
Can I just keep you just at the first aid post, perhaps, then? So this was serving quite a large area. Was it a big first aid post, or do you remember much about it?
All I remember was it was the RAP, Regimental Aid Post, as they call it, and it was in a clump of trees, well back from where we had been fighting, by the way, because by now I'd gone about 7 miles up the road, yes? And incidentally, that's it. As we came into Pondy, before the battle started, the planes were over us. Our planes, but the Japanese had them.
Oh, really?
Because we left, quite a lot of things were left behind. I know this is daft, but it's true, you see.
And they picked them up from Rangoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our airport was right next door to us, Mingledon, you see. Anyway, there were two Japanese planes as well. You could tell them by their. But they bombed us as we arrived at Pondy. They took the whole front mudguard off my bloody vehicle. This is true. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Nothing. Didn't touch the engine or anything. And, well, we then, from there, we went to Prome.
So you left your wounded at the regimental
aid post.
Yeah, right.
Actually, they were taken by truck to the river where there were launches. There were quite a few launches, by the way, at that time. It took them up to wherever they had to go, Schwebo, or wherever they were able to get off to go to hospital at Mamio.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Incidentally, I didn't know this at the time, but my wife and the families had been moved from Mamio to India. We didn't know about this at all. But that's something else.
So you had it all also in your mind that the Japanese were getting near your
wife? We didn't, exactly. All the married families were scared to death, you know, what was going to happen. Because they'd been bombed already as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to this, Prome was a long way up the road. And we were told we were going in reserve, yes. We had a night's sleep. But early the next morning, we were bombed and shelled. The first bomb fell on the headquarters. Prior to that, we had to give up our vehicles.
Oh, really?
I don't know why it was, but we were given mules.
Oh, right.
And we had to make a contraption to fit over the mules, to put a bipod on one side, the base plate on the top of the mule, and the barrel on the other side. You understand
me?
And we did that. We did all that overnight.
Where did the mules come from?
They must have been with the convoy somewhere, because we had, what do you call them? We had Sikhs.
Is it the muleteers?
No, that's not the name I'm thinking about. Sices, we called them. The Sice was the mule people who looked after. So how long they've been with us, I couldn't tell you.
Right, so you had a Sice in charge of your mules.
Yes.
Right, because they're difficult animals.
Very
they?
Difficult. And what's more, we lost nearly all of them at Prome after all the trouble. And it got so bad that it was every man for himself. Now, as I was coming out, one of my friends, one of my corporals, Corporal Barber, Nappy Barber. Nappy is an Indian word for barber, so he was called Nappy Barber. He'd been badly hit, and I was... My old driver who taught me to drive was with me. He took another fellow, and I took Nappy on my back not in a fireman's. He had his hand around my neck. And I saw my neighbour, Lieutenant Grist, with my drum corporal, Eddie Thompson. He died, actually, but that was... I saw him taking him out across the field, and I was making towards the road where there might be some vehicles, where there was actually, but suddenly he gripped me around the neck like this. I didn't know about cadaveric spasms at that time, but He died in my on my back. Oh. He had no leg. All his legs was blown off. You know. And that's the last thing I remembered till I woke up in the hospital a couple of days later.
Right. So had you been hit?
I don't know whether it was... I had a sliver of shrapnel went right through my hand and my leg. I had... But I don't remember anything.
Right.
I don't remember so anything. I think I was exhausted and, yeah.
Or
you know,
whatever. Sort of
but I woke up in hospital in Maymeal.
Right. So you'd been evacuated somehow.
Yes, and I don't know how they got us out, actually. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is I woke up, and Julia's cousin was by my bed.
Really?
Her cousin, one of the Seppings family. I told you about my dog earlier on, and when Julia left Maymeal, the quartermaster said he would look after the dog because she'd taken him with her. And he was going to get them put down, of course. And I come out, I go to the hospital at Maymeal. My colonel was there with me. And when they told me I was going to be evacuated, but I'd have to move out of hospital because they needed the beds. So I slept on a sand table for a couple of nights. But when I was going to this place, I saw this black dog. And I couldn't believe it. It was my dog. I knew it was. And I whistled. And he bounded towards me. And I found out that they saw the bugger to the quartermaster up there. And what annoyed me most was, we 2 days later, we went down to Mandalay. And from Mandalay to Shwebo on the train. We went to Mandalay by truck, ambulance. And there was about eight of us. And we went to Shwebo, and the regiment had just arrived there, what was left of the regiment. Some of the lads came round to see us. Colonel Baggett was away as well. We didn't meet the colonel. And then we had to go to a place called Michina.
Right, I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah.
Some questions I want to ask. Can you tell me, what do you remember of, is the hospital you woke up in was in Maymeal?
Yes.
Right, yeah. So what sort of a hospital was it? What sort of building?
Hospital.
It was a proper...
Real.
Proper.
That was the hospital,
yeah.
The BMH, British Military Hospital.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how was that functioning? I mean, they had
pretty
a lot
fair.
Of casualties, I
oh,
suppose.
Pretty fair.
Mm.
But having said that, quite a lot of the casualties were sent by river right up so they could be evacuated from Moulmein, which had an airfield there, you see. That was quite a way up the river, but that's quite a lot of people went that way. Less seriously wounded, could I put it that way, went to Maymeal.
Right.
They had to wait their turn, you understand me? So that's what happened there. That's why I was in Maymeal.
Right.
My
and
wife...
You went there by... Left there by lorry and then by train.
Yes, ambulance took us down to Mandalay, and from Mandalay we got the train. We were going to Michina.
Okay. So what did you see of Mandalay? Had you
nothing.
Been there before?
Never.
No, right.
I saw nothing of Mandalay at all, really. Not really. I saw nothing. I knew we were there... when we got out to get onto the train. And when we got to Shwebo, I said the regiment had just arrived there.
Yeah.
A couple of lads came down to see us. And how can I put this? I don't know if we're still on. Are we still on? The drivers deserted us. They shoved off.
What drivers were these? British
the train
army?
Drivers. No, no.
Oh,
they were Indian Railway or Burmese or whatever they were. And I got the name down here. How I got it down here, I don't know. Maymeal, we went down to Maymeal to Shwebo. Tim Bird was this chap's name. He was an engineer, not one of ours. He was an engineer chap. And he and another chap drove this ruddy train up to Michina. Yeah.
Okay, I'll stop you there.
Yeah.
Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 9.
Cheerio.
Harold Morris Metcalf, reel 10. So you got to Michina.
To Michina.
Right, okay. So, and a lot of the regiment were there.
No.
No, sorry.
No, not many of the regiment were there. Only the sick, wounded.
Right. Okay.
What? I'll tell you this in a moment. We got the Michener, went straight to the airport.